join the Five Tibetans online workshop. And this is Thursday, so this is our off-the-mat expert call. And today we're featuring Yael Melamed, who is a psychotherapist in San Francisco, California, where I assume it's not snowing like it is here in North Carolina today. I'm Susan Westbrook, and I'm your host and facilitator for the call. I'm the author of the Five Tibetans Yoga Workshop, Tone Your Body and Transform Your Life, which will be published by Findhorn Press this spring. I'm a transformational coach and spiritual healer, a facilitator, and an always very proud grandma to my grandson, Ben, who is 3 years old. I wanted to give you a little overview of the Five Tibetans online workshop today. We've been increasingly having registrations for the workshop, and I know some people are just coming on today. The goal of this workshop has been, since its inception 4 weeks ago, to support the development and maintenance of your daily personal practice. And the focus of the workshop is your daily practice of the Five Tibetans, which are five yoga-like exercises that have their history in Tibetan monasteries. They've been attributed with everything from balancing the chakras to setting back the hands of time. And in fact, Peter Kelder's book on the subject was called The Ancient Secret of the Fountain of Youth. So older folk like me who are getting into middle age are starting to take on the Five Tibetans, but also younger folk are starting to take them on because they are very effective exercises. Along with our Five Tibetans practice, we also contemplate a topic each week. And so on Tuesdays, we have an on-the-mat call together where we practice the Five Tibetans, but we also talk about the topic. And then on Thursdays, we have an expert who comes on with us and gives us more insight into the topic of the week. If you'd like to register or you know someone who might benefit, you can either go to my website at susanwestbrook.com or you can email me at susan@mastertheleak.com. And this Thursday, we are going to be rethinking resentment. And resentment is our topic. And Yael, thank you for coming out from San Francisco today. You want to greet everyone?
Yeah, hi everyone. Okay,
I'm going to speak a little bit louder. We're going to get your sound up here as we get started.
Okay.
That'll be great.
Can you hear me okay?
I can.
Okay.
All right,
great. I was just saying thank you so much for inviting me. It's actually a topic, not the sexiest topic in the world, but one that I'm very passionate about, and so I appreciate being invited.
Well, I know. I mean, and that's just a great place for us to talk about where and how we came together on this. We were in a workshop in San Francisco on a totally unrelated topic to the thing that either one of us is doing. And you asked me what my book was about, and I shared with you. And then you said, oh, well, you know, resentment. And you're the only person in the world I've ever met that has as much passion about the concept of resentment as I do. So what our call is going to be a lot about today is finding out about your perspective on it personally, but more therapeutically, because as a psychotherapist, your vision of resentment is a little bigger than mine is. I just know my world, but you see the worlds of other people as well. So I appreciate you coming on. And it is a sexy topic in its own way. So we're going to talk a little bit about you today, and whereas those callers who are used to being on the Thursday calls know that very often our focus is on the life journey of the person, we have the opportunity today to talk to Yael and get her perspective from both a personal and a therapeutic view. So we've worked a program today where you're going to get maximum benefit of her experience as a psychotherapist and her training in the area of resentment and a little bit of her personal story. So from the list, we can see that you have an MBA from Harvard, that you've had cancer, and that now you have some freedom. So I thought those were pretty good hooks to get people interested in your story. But really, maybe the story should start at you talking a little bit about how you came from going from an MBA to now being a psychotherapist in San Francisco.
Sure. Well, sometimes I think about the fact that I went to Harvard Business School and I just think, what in the world was I doing there? I can barely do math, actually. So it's kind of funny that I went there. And, you know, the reason I did that was, it was kind of implicit. It's debatable whether there were explicit messages from my family. I come from a family of immigrants, very achievement-oriented. And you know, whether my parents kind of gave me the message or whether it's somehow it's just something that I heard, I'm not sure, and maybe it doesn't really matter. But the message that I kind of heard was you can be a business person, a doctor, or a lawyer. So
okay.
I chose for my option, and business sounded the best. And, okay. you know, I really wanted my parents to be proud of me, and they worked really hard to give me a lot of opportunities, and I kind of wanted to make good on those opportunities. And so I was pretty, I would say pretty disconnected from myself and kind of just racing this race. Really at the fundamental level, I think, to make my parents proud of me. And so I found myself in business school. And as usual, I kind of found myself doing things that weren't that interesting to me and kind of being in my own happy land, daydreaming about people and about all the interactions between people and what was happening around me.
So the path was the path was unfolding, just not necessarily in the place that we might have anticipated that it would come.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. You know, and then something happened that really changed my life, and it was a real crisis. And I always liked that the Chinese character for crisis is emergency and opportunity. And so I was diagnosed with cancer. I was 24, just turned 24. It was skin cancer, and that was kind of my emergency and my opportunity. And, you know, obviously, it was really shocking. It was sort of a lot of coincidences happened that led me to discover it. And so at that point in time, I actually just didn't know how bad it was, what was going to happen. And it was almost like a surreal experience. Something happened, like this visual, where I read my obituary. I kind of fast-forwarded, and I saw my obituary in the newspaper.
At 24.
And it just, yeah.
Yes, right.
And it just said how good I was. At school. I got really good grades, and I was really good at school, and I was captain of this and captain of that. And I felt really sad that that was my obituary, that that's what I was leaving behind in the world. It felt empty, and I realized that that wasn't really who I was, and that wasn't the impact that I wanted to make in the world.
Yeah. And I just want to give acknowledgement at 24. I think that's pretty insightful there, that there's a lot of wisdom behind that obituary.
Yeah. You know, I some who knows where that kind of visual or vision came from, but I am I'm very grateful for that. And that was sort of the beginning of the end of that path. It took a while to unravel because, as I guess we all know, these kind of structures and belief systems get very concretized inside of us. So it was hard to just kind of jump out of that, but I just started to see that the world was bigger than the classroom or the 50th story of whatever building I had been working in, and so it was sort of a slow unraveling out of there. So that was what was happening in my outside life, but what was happening in my inside life, I guess this was another insight that I had, and I also don't know where this came from, but I was acutely aware that my cancer was actually the somatization of really toxic emotions. I thought, then I thought about it as anger that was showing up in my skin. And I, again, it's funny, I have no idea how I knew that, no clue. I had no idea about the world of psychology. And more recently, I actually was reading an article by Dr. Allison Adams saying that negative emotions in the body can cause cancer. And she lists the personality traits that are common in those with cancer, and one of them is harbors long-suppressed toxic emotions such as anger, resentment, and or hostility. The cancer-susceptible individual typically internalizes such emotions and has great difficulty expressing them. And I thought, wow.
Wow, that's an advertisement for purging all those inner negative emotions, if I ever heard one. It's like, wow. And again, I just want to credit you for a lot of insight and just personal wisdom to be able to take yourself from a place in a scary place at 24 years old with I have cancer to, wow, maybe this is something inside of me that I need to work on, not, wow, I need to have chemotherapy or do whatever to clear the outside.
Well, I don't know if I don't know if it was as neat and elegant as that on the time. It's sort of now looking back, I kind of can understand it. It was a little bit bumpier than that. But yeah, so but really, so maybe you could say my cancer, or you could say my resentment, was really the catalyst for me to reexamine my life and resolve some conflicts that I had been carrying around, and then open up to do what I feel that I was born and meant to do here in the world.
And at some point that led you, and where in that path did you decide that maybe you wanted to do psychotherapy as a profession?
Well, it's funny. So I had left Harvard because of my illness. Although, you know, it wasn't that I was so ill, because I ended up just having a few surgeries and then I was okay. But emotionally, it had a really big impact on me. So
sure.
I took a leave of absence, and then I was making plans to come back. And I actually remember sitting in my mom's office talking with her about my plans. I remember hearing a little voice saying, "You should go to school for psychology." And I thought, what are you talking? What is that? And I just like ignored it and steamrolled over it and continued and proceeded with my plans to go back to business school. But what I did realize was that I really like to be in a more creative space. And so, you know, I started out doing business strategy consulting, and slowly I found my way to more and more creative parts of business. I ended up working in beauty and fashion in the marketing department. So at least there was a lot of photography and visuals and art. But I just, again, these things happen. One day I just realized that it just wasn't for me. It wasn't deep enough for me. I wanted to do something deeper. And so I just quit. And my mom was really nervous. And she said, "What's the plan?" And I said, "The plan is no plan. The plan is, if you need to have a plan, then just it's no plan. That's the plan."
Right.
And I did a very kind of eat, pray, love kind of year.
Right.
And I started doing my own therapy and my own spiritual practice. And it just fell into place. It just became very clear to me that, in a way, I had always been studying people and always been very attuned to emotions, and that I could actually do that as my profession.
Well, the idea of no plan, I just want to settle on that for a second, is that many times when we're on a journey, the people around us want us to have a plan, and we just don't have one. We just know that we're not in the place that we're supposed to be, and we know that there's another place that we're getting to, and in that moment, we don't know exactly what the plan is. And so I appreciate you sharing that, because I know that for myself and for many people who are on the call today and who will hear this call, that just will probably resonate with them, and they'll be very connected to that moment of no plan, especially looking at someone who's telling you, asking you, "What's the plan?" And then you're saying, "I've got no idea." So, but it sounds like you worked out that plan very well for yourself by taking time off and giving yourself time to think about it and be with what you really wanted to do in your life and what you think you were being called to do. Because at this point, I think of it as a calling. Do you think of it that way?
Absolutely. Yeah, I definitely know that this was sort of my contract. This is why I'm on Earth, is to do this type of work and to do healing work. And I think that once you're actually aligned with your kind of soul's path, everything is very easy. I just fell into place very quickly. I think I applied in August. By January, I was already living in San Francisco and writing my first paper. And so everything just fell into place really easily from there.
Very cool. So I think if it's okay with you, I think we'll just start talking about resentment, and then you'll just keep telling us little bits and pieces of your story as we go through. Is that a good way to handle it?
Yeah, sure.
Because there's still more, I know, but we'll get to all that. So from a you perspective, from a therapeutic perspective, from your work with clients, I mean, how would you describe resentment, and how does it show? I mean, why does it start showing up? What causes it?
Sure. Well, it's funny, when you ask what's resentment, the first thing I think about is what it's not, because it's just not something people identify very often. You know, people can say that they're angry or sad, or maybe if they're really brave, they'll say they're afraid or happy, but you don't hear people walking around talking about the affect of resentment that often.
Absolutely.
So, I think it's pretty hard to recognize.
Right.
And part of that is because a lot of it operates at unconscious levels, which I'll get into a little in a minute.
Okay.
But also, I think it's kind of taboo. It's abstract. It's vulnerable. And it's maybe shameful.
Yeah.
And so you really just, you don't hear that a lot. Do you agree?
Oh, I do. I've done workshops with, you know, doing the Five Tibetans workshops, and we get to resentment. We ask, you know, who feels resentment? Nobody raises a hand. And it's because, you know, we're just, I think anger is kind of sexy in our culture today. You know, we all know it's okay to be angry. But wow, resentment, it just like, I guess my take on it is nice people don't do that. You know, it's like, ooh, nice people, you know, don't hold resentment. And my experience in my own life and looking in the lives of others is I don't know anybody who doesn't do it. And so then I'm concerned that it's always something that we suppress or hide from. And I love that you use the word shame around it, because I think absolutely we feel shame when we can identify that in ourselves. So, yeah, this is why we're resentment buddies, because I think we just get it. And I don't get it because I see it in other people. I get it because I see it in myself, you know, because I can feel it and then I can see the impact that it has. But I think it's insidious. I think it is.
And so it's this thing that kind of really flies under the radar, yet it's so widespread. And I already talked about my experience with it, and I see it in so many patients. And even outside of the therapy room, I just see it all the time. So I really want to normalize it. And also say that clinical work shows again and again what a large role the affect of resentment actually plays in mental health issues. So, you know, if we're not acknowledging it, then we're not healing it, which means we're not healing various mental health issues. So it's really important to kind of bring it to the light so that it can be healed.
So can I stop you for a second for some of us who might not? Yeah. When you said you want to normalize it, can you just say a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much just what it sounds like. I want anyone who is hearing this who may be totally conscious, partially conscious, or even unconscious about their resentment, just to know that it's actually normal, that it's okay, that you're not alone, and to hopefully minimize or reduce some of the shame around it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So to answer your question, I just talked about what it's not, but you asked me what it is. So
that's okay, because what it's not is, you know, I think it's, I'm glad you started there. That was perfect.
Yeah, so what it is, well, Susan, in your book, I got to read one of the chapters, which I loved, the chapter on resentment, and you talked about how the word resent is derived from the Latin, which means to re-feel. So, you know, the anger is something that you feel in a moment, but resentment is something that you kind of go over and over and over again and get trapped in this loop and continue to re-feel whatever this injury is. You may think about it also as a complex, which is C.J. Jung's concept, which is a core pattern of emotions, memories, perceptions, wishes that are in the unconscious, and they're organized around a common theme. And the reason I'm bringing that in is that there really is a hugely unconscious aspect of the resentment that needs to be addressed in terms of healing and freeing it. And, you know, ultimately, it's a way of trying to go back to early conflicts. It's usually rooted in early conflicts, things that happen in childhood. And so by maintaining this structure, it's the psyche's way of actually trying to resolve these early conflicts. But unfortunately, what it does often is it leads to the renewal of those conflicts, because by maintaining that same organization, some of the injury that happened when you were younger ends up getting repeated. You sort of end up creating it in your life because of this structure. So,
is it possible you could give us an example, or just like, because that's a lot to take on. So can we make that a little bit more concrete?
Sure. You know, imagine that a kid was really wounded and humiliated and shamed in their childhood, right? So they'll kind of create an entire structure around protecting themselves from that shame, and one of those ways might be attacking any sort of perceived threat.
Okay.
So then that child kind of grows up and gets into a relationship, and that child is already primed to look for threats and then to attack them. So that child's partner may kind of just be coming up to them and saying something very sweet that they don't mean in any sort of malignant way, but because this person is sort of primed to search for attacks and then attack them, it might result in a lot of conflict and things start to get really negative and bad, and then the humiliation and attack that you're trying to avoid actually gets created.
Okay. So is it the root is a little bit self-protection then, it feels like?
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm sorry if that was a little bit too abstract. I'll get into it. Why don't I get into it in a more concrete way?
Okay, no, I think what you just did was great, but I guess I'm just trying to sort of sum it all up for myself, and it feels like we create some self-protective behaviors when we're young because we need to, because we're little. We can't protect ourselves, and then we just actually don't outgrow. Or I guess you're saying that those self-protective behaviors kind of, I like that word, organize. They become a sort of a life of their own in a way, sort of a structure develops around them. And then we sort of take that unknowingly into our adult relationships. Is that sort of?
Definitely. We take them unknowingly into our relationships. And so we have a protection that doesn't serve us. And not only doesn't it serve us, but it often recreates the very conflicts we're trying to protect ourselves again from our childhood.
Yeah.
And one other way that in the literature of thinking about resentment is just unforgiveness. It's unforgiveness, the inability to forgive.
Is there a therapy definition for forgiveness? I did emails this week on the five hearts of healing, and forgiveness is one of them. But I'm interested: is there a therapeutic definition for forgiveness that we might benefit from?
There isn't one, honestly. There really isn't one, and it's funny because in the literature, I've actually found that a lot of the psychoanalytic literature draws upon religious and spiritual texts to talk about forgiveness.
Okay.
So I'd say there isn't one, but I think ultimately it's releasing and letting go of something.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's sort of interesting. Are there any other things you want to talk about, causes, or do we want to move on and sort of talk about how it shows up and where are you in that?
So, well, I think just to make this to ground the conversation a little bit, I just want to give very clear ideas about the manifestation, how you can kind of identify it in yourself,
whether
or not you have resentment.
So I think we are going to talk about how it shows up then. Is that pretty much
Yeah.
What? Okay.
Yeah.
For those of you who are listening on telephone, we have some slides. So I like my picture there with the bomb going off. So how does resentment show up? How does it manifest in this?
Okay, so, you know, first of all, just the quality, the way that I detect it, it's a very biting energy. It's almost kind of like acid, and it's a barrier. It keeps people away. And the way you can know, you know, some of the qualities to know if you're experiencing resentment, one is when someone hurts you, you really tend to loop about it, and it's very hard to let go. There's the desire to punish the person who hurt you. You may notice that you're cut off from people that you want to be closer to, or that when you get hurt, you cut yourself off. You can often sense a deep feeling of victimization or a deep feeling of injustice. Hmm. People who suffer from resentment also are very harsh self-critics.
Yeah.
So, you know, that goes inside too. It gets turned against the self. And so you can really see a lot of harshness towards yourself. And in a couple, the way it shows up a lot is as a kind of either a passive-aggressive energy, a lot of tension, or a lot of aggression.
Hmm.
And there's a couple's famous couples researcher named John Gottman, and he talks about the four horsemen of the apocalypse, meaning the qualities that if you kind of see them in a couple, it's not a good indicator for the longevity of the relationship unless they're healed. And one of those is contempt, which closely follows resentment. So it's something that really needs to be addressed in couples. And the quality of this resentment, it kind of has this unrelenting compulsion in it. So if you're familiar with this unrelenting compulsive feeling around the hurt, that's also a really good sign. And then, you know, we made that mind-body connection. Just physically, according to Chinese medicine, you know, anger resides in your liver, bitterness resides in your gallbladder, and then your stomach holds a lot of emotion. So, you know, it could be problems in any of those places as well.
Hmm. So unrelenting compulsion, give us some ideas about, I think I understand that, but what are you talking about, unrelenting compulsion?
It's kind of, you know, the way I've seen it show up, so this is kind of the order of how the feelings go. So, you know, first we feel sort of unjustly treated or unseen or shamed for something that we offered in good faith or rejected or something like that, right? So underneath that is humiliation and shame. underneath the humiliation and shame is a deep, deep hurt and a sadness by the betrayal. And then if we're really honest with ourselves, there's some wrath under that. And then if the humiliation is deep enough, there's a certain vengefulness, a desire for revenge, and kind of it's an addictive craving for reparation. Mm. So it's this feeling that redress is only possible if the other person would suffer the same injustice as us. Mm. And remember, this might be unconscious, so you might not be conscious of feeling like that, but the kind of going over and going over and craving for reparation and looping with the object that hurt us is what I mean by that.
Okay, so I'm a person in the world. I would like to get it down to one more level here. I'm an average person in the world, and I've suffered some humiliation. And I'm glad actually that you named that, because I think that, you know, embarrassment, I feel like, is one of the hardest emotions that most of us end up bearing. And I think a lot of what gets put out as resentment may have started there. But so we've had this humiliation in our lives, and like, just talk to me about what do you see in, I know you can't share details about clients, but just in the global view, what do you see show up in the office? What's happening in people's lives day to day that shows this compulsion?
So one is, you know, people will just mention something that happened 30 years ago, but it's not, sometimes there's a quality where someone will uncover a memory and will kind of go through it, and maybe we'll work on it for a few weeks. This is more like it's their mantra that this thing happened. It's as though the identity is really connected to it.
Would that be what I might call a story?
Right. It's a story, but it's a story that's very present and constant, and that they go back to very regularly, and that as much as they talk about it with me, it can't discharge. It doesn't discharge. You know, usually when you talk about something painful and difficult, you can actually process through it. You can discharge out of it.
Okay.
But when you start to be caught in the complex of resentment, talking about it actually doesn't discharge. And it's almost like a frenzy. I'm imagining, you know, how the prophets way back in the day used to kind of go into these ecstatic states and kind of frenzied states. That's the quality of what I see. And just kind of going over and over it again.
Okay. I'm going to stop you for just a second. We have to do this sometimes. Your volume has faded, so just so they'll know, I sent you a text that said there was some mic feedback, but I'm just going to give you a second because I want people to be able to hear what you're saying, so we'll just need to get our volume up a little bit.
Okay. Is that okay. Better?
It's a little better. I think I could tell that the volume faded a bit too, so I don't know if you want to adjust on the computer. Maybe sometimes you can make the, sorry for those of you who are listening, but you can't really hear or hear, then it doesn't do us any good. You can adjust on your computer sometimes, too.
Okay, how's that?
That's much better for me.
Okay, sorry about that.
That's okay. I appreciate we have participants who will raise their hand and say, oh, I can't hear, and that's the only way I know it. So somebody did that, and I just want to make sure we were hearing you.
Okay,
so thanks. Yeah.
Susan, I thought it might be useful to talk about why the psyche wants to do this, why the psyche wants to hang on to this. Why would anyone want to be caught in this kind of relentless loop?
Yes, I'm up for that. Yes, because that's a question, isn't it? It's like we're all listening to this call. I'm just going to put it out there as a possibility. We all are harboring some resentment somewhere, probably, whether it's big or small. And we know it's not serving us, and we know it actually might make us sick. And then, so why in the world would we hang on to it?
Yeah, so I once heard someone say this, and I loved it, that St. Augustine said that feeling resentment is like drinking poison and expecting that the other person dies. So as you're alluding to, it's sort of like someone else has done something wrong, but I'm going to feel bad to punish them, right? So So why would we do that? You know, at one point, this was actually really adaptive. We don't do things for no reason. There's a really good and legitimate reason that this resentment exists. You know, we talked before about how it's often related to shame or humiliation, right? So as a child, you very often can't fight back. You just have to kind of take it.
Right.
So by developing this hatred and this anger, it's actually turning a passive experience into an active one. So it's actually empowering at a certain point in time when you're younger, because you're actually becoming active rather than being really passive. Another thing it does is it protects you. It keeps a distance between you and whoever the offender is. And by hating them in this way and looping about it, you know, you actually can protect yourself.
Right. So you're putting a barrier. You're literally putting a barrier between you and the other person.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly. But at a certain point in time, you no longer want to carry that around, right? Because when you're an adult, you aren't passive, and you actually can become empowered in a real way. So it no longer serves you, and you also probably don't need to protect yourself from that person. There are things you can do. You can take yourself out of the situation. You can stand up for yourself. So what was adaptive, it's no longer adaptive, and yet we still can hang on to it. Part of it is sometimes we just don't have the tools or awareness to let it go. And a lot of times people just don't realize that they have a choice. The same reason I didn't realize that I could be something besides a doctor, lawyer, or business person.
Right.
People don't realize that there's actually a different way to be, and they have the choice. And then, you know, the other reason is you mentioned liking the idea of the organization. We get organized around this complex, and it's very true. And so the psyche can actually be very threatened by changing its organization. The psyche fears collapse. And so I see that a lot in the room, that when I'm working with resentment, it's actually really hard, because when you challenge it, challenging the resentment actually means challenging someone's organization.
Right.
And so the psyche will really fight to hold on to it. And we also talked about how people who suffer from resentment are actually very harsh self-critics. So they can also feel very easily condemned by that challenge. And so it's a really tricky thing.
It's like a double whammy, sort of. It's just like, here, you're challenging what I've built myself around, and you're challenging me at the same time. So,
right, and I'm so hard on myself that the way I'm going to hear that challenge is to then turn it against myself and attack myself.
Right. And again, that's good data for just that sort of sense of normalizing it, so that when the finger does point in our direction, whether it's our own finger or someone else's, that we recognize that we're in a normal pattern of human behavior, not doing something that's abnormal or something we should be ashamed of.
Yeah, it's definitely a very typical pattern of behavior, and it's not shameful. It's just painful.
Right.
It's painful for you, for the person who's carrying that around. But the good news is that there's a lot that we can do.
So that's what we should do. So what can we do about feeling resentful?
So, you know, if resentment is unforgiveness, then the antidote to resentment is forgiveness. Mm. And so it's actually all about becoming empowered. It's about processing unprocessed material, which is often around early conflicts with the parents, and realizing that we have a choice, that we're free to forgive. And, you know, spiritual traditions, I was mentioning that a lot of the analytic literature on resentment actually draws on spiritual and religious traditions. You know, one example is Kabbalah, which has been the Jewish mysticism, which has been talking about this concept for thousands of years. And the premise of Kabbalah is that we don't want to be reactive. We actually want to become proactive, just in life in general. We want to be proactive. And when you're carrying resentment around, you're very reactive. Hmm. You're the effect, and the cause was what someone did to you. And the way to transform, and according to Kabbalistic theory, to kind of create light, is to transform that into something proactive. So when you decide, you know what, you did what you did, but I'm going to choose to forgive you. I'm going to make that choice, and I'm going to become proactive. That's actually, that's how you heal it.
Right. Well, that's very empowering. I mean, you're stepping into, you immediately in that situation have gone to the other side of being the victim. You've gone from being the victim to empowering yourself with a choice that can allow you to be released from the feelings and the situation too.
Yeah, and you know, I'm aware that these are just words, right? This might sound to someone like blah, blah, blah. You know, before you actually go through it and experience it, it's really hard. It's really hard to know what it really means and to connect to it. And I have my own experience with it that I can share where it actually happened for me.
Yeah, we'd love to hear that.
So, you know, I kind of mentioned that I had these early conflicts with my family that I needed to resolve, and all sorts of people were telling me Kabbalah this, forgiveness that, and I was like, okay, again, it's really just words until you have the experience. And I was visiting a healer in Brazil, and I had this moment that I would call kind of a spontaneous healing, and I was very upset at my brother, who I love very much, so I just have to say that I love him, and he's an amazing person, and he's one of my greatest teachers. And of course, sometimes the road with our teachers isn't always the smoothest.
True.
So I am very close to him, but we had this particular conflict, and you know, as I worked with it, I realized that it was actually, I thought it was all about this conflict between me and my brother, but actually embedded in it were these earlier family conflicts. But without going into the details, I don't think the details really matter. I was really, really upset at him and resentful. And it went to a very kind of deep levels about something that he was choosing to do. And then when I was there in Brazil at that healer and I was just, just sitting and meditating, I just had this instant release. And I just realized, wait a second. This is his karma. This is actually his consciousness. It has nothing to do with me, and it's really not my problem. I hope for him that he, you know, will develop the highest consciousness possible, but it's actually not mine. And I can't even explain their level of relief. It was like 1,000 pounds just lifted out of my body. And I realized, wait a second, this isn't even about me. And it was very empowering, and just a lot changed for me in that very particular moment.
Can you give me an example of what was the outcome of that? What started to change in your outward life?
Well, what started to change in my outward life was, first of all, just how I felt, literally, physically. I felt different. I felt lighter. I felt better. And I could just let things go more. If someone did something that maybe would have hurt me before, I could just realize it didn't have much to do with me and just let it go. And so it just changed my relationships and mostly my relationship with myself, and the way I experienced things was just smoother, lighter, easier, really relieving.
Go ahead.
Oh, you go ahead.
Well, I guess I wanted to sort of maybe context it in a way that is about forgiveness, because I was thinking about this week, and it, you know, you're calling it the karma, but I was started thinking that we're all on our own path. And so what I'm starting to work on in my own life is noticing that other people are on their paths and wanting them to be able to grow and learn, just like I want me to grow and learn, which would sort of be our karma. And then sometimes those come into conflict. Like maybe they needed to learn something and I happened to be on the receiving end of it, and starting to really work from my inner consciousness more from a place of I want you to be able to learn and grow, and I forgive you for hurting me in the process. I guess I've been trying to organize myself around, as you would say, organize myself around of being with the fact that we're all working it out in our own way, and we might not all like the way someone else is working it out, but especially not when we're on the receiving end of something hurtful. But just trying to start to come from a standpoint of, yeah, it is really about their work. You might call it karma. It might just be their work. And then I just happen to be sort of, I got to do my work in the midst of their work, maybe is a better way to put it. So I don't know. Sure. That's just what I've been sort of working on the last couple of weeks anyway.
Yeah, it's almost like you zoom out a little bit and you can hold things a little bit more lightly.
Right. And also it's part of forgiveness for me is allowing for the humanity in myself and others. And I think when you talk about resentment being something that I'm a type A oldest child, and, you know, I've got the whole lineage. And so hard on myself is one of those things that, that sort of comes with that package deal. And I think as I've been, and, you know, just looking more into that, it feels like releasing myself from resentment about my own failures as well as releasing other people is really just stepping into our humanity and recognizing that we're all making mistakes all the time, and we're all doing things we wish we didn't do all the time, and we're all having impact maybe that we don't want to be responsible for all the time. And that's what I want to start holding lightly, I think, in my life. And so that I can hold other people's humanity lightly better also. So I don't know if that's an editorial comment or whether that's my own putting into the space, but that's sort of where I think where my path is going in terms of forgiveness and resentment right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think the most important thing just to realize is that no matter what other people are doing to us, we are empowered beings. We can be proactive, and right. We choose what to do with that. I did want to share some more concrete suggestions because, you know, not everyone can wait for an epiphany.
Not everybody can go to Brazil and meditate, right?
So I wanted to give some pretty concrete suggestions.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So the first thing that you can do is actually really, you know, I'll talk about some things you can do on your own, and then I'll talk about some things that might cost some money and involve outside practitioners. But just starting with what you can do yourself, the first thing is really to just accept exactly where you are. Where you are is okay. There's a reason why this organization got constellated, why it came to be. And just be kind, loving, and gentle with yourself. I had a mentor who always used to tell me, don't beat yourself up, Yael. You'll just end up with bruises.
Yeah.
And I always remember that. It's like so basic and logical, and it's true. Why would I beat myself up? I don't need bruises.
Right.
There's no point. And, you know, feelings like this feeling of resentment is actually, feelings are always guideposts to underlying things that need to be resolved. So just like, you know, my resentment and my cancer helped me go much deeper and resolve things and actually kind of change my life in a positive way, the same thing can happen. So just really encourage you to not hate yourself. You know, we talked about this harsh critic and that goes hand in hand with resentment, but just to do your very, very best to just accept where you are. And the second thing is really shine the light of awareness. And Susan, I know that you're into mindfulness. And this is kind of what I'm saying is really very similar to mindfulness and just shining light so that the resentment doesn't have to be in the dark recesses of the unconscious, and just more and more bringing awareness to it. And by being on this call or listening to this call, you're really already doing that. And your body has an organicity, a kind of intelligence and drive towards healing. And mindfulness, meaning just, you know, meditating, maybe feeling where your resentment is in your body, and literally just watching it, just observing it, will actually make a difference. You know, there was a Harvard study, a neuroscientist named Sarah Lazard did an 8-week study where she watched participants who meditated for 27 minutes a day. And it was associated with structural changes in the brain region that were involved with learning and memory, emotional regulation, sense of self, and perspective taking. So this isn't just, you know, foo-foo stuff. There's actually some really a lot of science that really shows how effective this is. So how much you do sometimes when you don't do, basically.
Can I just say that's one of the reasons in the workshop that we have our weekly contemplation, and that the first 5 contemplations are about things that basically we don't want to talk about. And this week is about resentment. So to me, that's where the power in the 5 Tibetans came in the first place, was in consciously being with the mantras and being with the behaviors that I might not be proud to own or I might be ashamed of, and then just making that thought process more intentional over time. Mm-hmm. So it's just a different way of meditating in a way. It's about bringing it. I guess I'm thinking about intentionally being mindful about something, you know, like something that we're not proud of or we're ashamed of or we're afraid of, because I tend to deal with clients who are, you know, coaches and spiritual healers and people who've got their stuff together, so to speak. And then what I find is that the things that we think we're not supposed to be doing or the things that we should know better not to do are the very things that then creep in and sort of take over our lives. So just, I guess what I'm putting into the meditation mix is also just intentional mindfulness and letting yourself say the word resentment out loud.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. Yeah. So that was one thing. Another thing are visualizations. I found them to be very, very effective. So first off, you can use your creativity and make up any visual that works for you. But I could give you a couple.
That would be great.
These are a couple that I have used in the past. One is imagining a door that kind of goes from the top of your head to the bottom of your feet. So basically kind of connecting all of your chakras and your chakra system. And you could just imagine opening that big door, just opening the doors and letting out anything you don't need, anything that's clogging your energetic system, mm-hmm. and just releasing it.
Great.
And that takes, it takes 10 seconds of concentration, and you could do it several times a day. Another one is, just taking your anger or your resentment and putting it in a box and then just sending it up to whatever you believe it is, whether you want to call it God or the light or universal consciousness, but just kind of, or the recycling bin or whatever it is.
Yeah, that's good.
But just kind of getting it out of you and sending it and releasing it. That's another visualization. And I have a couple other suggestions. One is mantras. So mantras, I believe you work with mantras too, right, Susan?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so mantras, have been used again for thousands of years, and there's a lot of research on the power of sound and how it affects the brain hemispheres. And so there are two particular mantras that I recommend for forgiveness. And one is called Ho'oponopono, and I can spell that out. It's H-O-P-A-N-O-P-A-N-O. In case anyone wants to look it up. And it's actually an ancient Hawaiian mantra that was used to reconcile between families. And actually in the 20th century, they started to use it in the criminal justice system, which I thought was really cool. And
crazy.
Really cool and interesting, and things they do in other countries. And so all you say is the name of the person that you need to forgive, and then you just say, I'm sorry, please forgive me, I love you, thank you. I'm sorry, please forgive me, I love you, thank you. And you would just repeat it over and over and over like a mantra. And then you also say it to yourself. So that's one. And, another one is just saying, you are loved, I am loved. You are thanked, I am thanked. You are blessed, I am blessed. You are released, I am released. So those are just two ideas.
And I would just say these, is this something I do when I'm aware that I'm holding resentment, or is it something I do? I mean, how do you, when I find myself in the loop, when do you suggest that we use these mantras?
So I suggest that you actually make it part of a daily practice. So, whether it's like every day when you wake up and before you go to bed for 10 minutes, and then it's very helpful when you find yourself in the loop to kind of transmute your thoughts rather than looping about the painful thing that happened, rather to replace it with these words. So both.
Okay. So I can, if I'm doing it in my daily practice and it's become a part of my thinking system, then when I'm in that situation, I'm more likely to use it and call upon it.
Exactly. And kind of just, it's like thought substitution, just changing the looping painful thoughts and then replacing it with these words. And then the final suggestion of what you can do on your own is something called the emotional freedom techniques. And so this is a system of also sound and words and tapping. It's based on a lot of ancient systems and on the energy meridian system. And you basically kind of tap in these different parts of your body to release toxic emotions. And you can find these videos on YouTube. There's someone named Brad Yates, Y-A-T-E-S, who actually does a video for resentment. And you just follow along. So you watch him do the tapping and saying the words, and you just kind of follow along. I think he's actually the one who talks about St. Augustine.
Okay.
And so this has also been shown to be pretty effective for releasing difficult feelings.
Yeah, I noticed I get the newsletter from Wayne Dyer, and I noticed that he had a whole newsletter on, and he's taken on EFT as a way of working on forgiveness, specifically on working on forgiveness. So that might be another resource for people who are Wayne Dyer fans to look up that resource.
Yeah, no, it's a good one. It's kind of the acupuncture, meridian points, and neuro-linguistic programming all combined. Yeah, it's really recommend it.
Yeah. So yeah. Where is that? Is there anything else that is in your bag of tricks about? Because you've given us a lot of good opportunities to go out and utilize. I really like the mantra piece because that can become so easily a part of our daily thinking. Are there any other therapies or, you know, what if I find that I just can't get out of the loop and I find that it's really taking me down and it's affecting my health and I'm not able to work it out myself, then what do you suggest at that point?
So, yeah, at that point, I think that outside help can be very helpful because, you know, we don't need to suffer alone and it can be very, you know, we are wounded a lot of times in relationship. And so it's also part of healing to be in relationship. So obviously I believe in psychology and psychotherapy to help process through traumas and to help work out these kind of nasty feelings that feel so toxic. It can be a very bumpy ride when you're working with resentment. A lot can come up and a lot of kind of tension and conflict in the room. But if you stick through it, it can be very, very useful. I think that acupuncture can be very helpful as well. You can ask the acupuncturist to focus on the organs that we mentioned, on the gallbladder, on the stomach, on the liver. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it can show up in the lungs. So acupuncture is useful. Your five Tibetans, of course.
Thank you. You're a very good marketer. I appreciate it.
And one last kind of adjunct therapy that's actually really useful with this is something called network spinal analysis. And what it is actually light touch chiropractic that basically touches different points on the spine to release tensions that have been held. So, you know, your spine controls your nervous system. And when we experience traumas and we don't metabolize them, they actually get stored as tension or vibration in the tissues between the vertebrae. And so that affects how we process things, how we feel emotions, our perspective, how we experience the world. And so what this does is actually release the tension that's been stored so that our nervous system and our brain can go back to optimal functioning.
Wow.
So that's also, yeah, really useful.
Well, I guess that makes me, I guess I want to put in here that, you know, one of the things that I would look for that I know a lot of people and myself included, that when we're in those situations where we're holding things that we need to let go of, a lot of time we have back pain. And the back pain, you know, I might go out on a big limb here and say that, you know, 8 out of 10 people who suffer from chronic back pain, unless there's some ultimate, you know, physical impairment that you can probably look for resentment or something like that in the life force that's creating that pain. And I'm just thinking about what you just said and saying, wow, it's actually laying itself down in our back, in our spinal column. I mean, that's sort of like the woman who, you know, that you quoted earlier about it somatizing as cancer. I mean, I think one of the biggest take homes that I've had in my personal life about this is how much of the physical aspect is actually impacted by this thing that we won't even talk about, you know, this dirty word called resentment. And I really appreciate that, you know, that you're doing the work out loud and that you're encouraging people to take it on and not shamefully and to see it as just another thing that we need to be working on. I'm sure you're going to have some serious impact on the folk that are in your sphere. So as we go out today, I just want to give you a chance to sort of sum up for us. You know, you've given us a lot to think about, and I'm definitely going to be listening to this tape again, and I hope other people will take that opportunity as well. But maybe just some key pointers as we go out to just really encourage us around this concept of resentment.
Yeah, so remember that you're not alone, that a lot of people experience this, and that what you're feeling has roots that are very valid and legitimate. You know, maybe try to go back to those roots and resolve it as much as you can. And be kind to yourself in the process. There's really nothing else to do but be kind to yourself, because the alternative is damaging.
Causes bruises. And,
causes bruises.
Right.
And I know I gave a lot of different things that you could do, and sometimes that can be really overwhelming. And what I would say is just trust yourself. You know, these things, whatever calls to you, if it's just one little thing, then just do that one little thing, and then maybe something else will call to you. And kind of just to trust the organicity of your own psyche to kind of just pick what's right for you. And I think it will lead you to the right place.
Yeah. Well, I just sort of like to put out there and invite people who, you know, to write about and to maybe send you information or to send me information, and just let us know what intentionally focusing on resentment does. I mean, I appreciate that you said in a clinical setting that it can, you know, can be hard work and that you might see a lot of stuff. We call that in Reiki, we call that a healing crisis, that as we start to pull stuff out, especially from the past, that we're going to feel some bad stuff along with the healing. But it would be really great to hear from people and to see what making resentment sort of an intentional contemplation does in terms of their relationships with themselves and others. And I'm sure that would be, you know, great for you to have, because I know you're going to be talking about this subject and probably write a book on it. And so, you know, maybe give you some data that people are experiencing in their own lives. But I really appreciate that you took your time today. I know you're really busy. I put the little bridge on there because I so miss the bridge going across up to Marin. But I just want to really thank you for taking your time and sharing your wisdom with us and sharing your life and your therapeutic knowledge with us today. Because I think you can even tell the way I'm talking about it. I just believe that this is really important work. And I know that a lot of people are going to be able to access healing coming from this direction. And I know that your clients are going to get great value from working with you there. And maybe we'll all be working with you someday. You'll be on the radio or something. Just putting that out there for you. Do you want to say anything else before I do my advertisement for next Tuesday?
Just thank you for giving me the space to talk about something that I really believe in. And, yeah, so thanks.
Yeah, and thank you. Thank you for your work on the call and in the world, too. So I'm just going to advertise about next Tuesday on February the 18th. We'll be on our On the Mat call next week, so from 12 to 1 Eastern time. If you're not signed up but you think you might like to participate with us and create a personal practice of mindfulness around some pretty tough topics, and I appreciate that we've been able to deal with one so out in the open today. Next week, our title will be To Be or Not to Be, and we'll be contemplating doubt, another one of those things that can often hold us back and take peace and joy away from our lives, and we'll be looking at the third Tibetan as we look at doubt next week. So I want to say thank you to Yael again. Thank you to all of you who are listening or are listening either in real time or on the replay for taking your time out today to contemplate the concept of resentment. And I wish you much peace and light in your week this week, and hope to see you on Tuesday. Thanks. Bye-bye.
The organizer has ended the session. And